Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Haddit.com Radio Show. Haddit.com Radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this 22nd day of August, 2019. We're here with our co-host, Jay Basser. And today our guest speaker is John Dorley, and we're going to do some discussing on this new claims program they have out here. We want to be sure everyone is as well informed on it as, you know, they can possibly be. So, it might sound repetitious to some of you, but bear with us. It's still in the beginning stages, and we want it to be where a veteran can make an educated decision when they're dealing with this stuff. So how are you doing today, John?
I'm doing good, Gerald. I'm doing good, considering. So, calling from Minnesota, St. Paul, Minneapolis, 612 area code. Weather's nice. We're getting ready for winter, if you can believe it. But, no, it's all good, Gerald. How are you doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there. And hopefully keep hanging in there. Seems like every day you got another issue or two.
Gerald, you touched on a real important topic with the VA, and I don't think it can be repetitious at all, because things are changing on the landscape of the VA all the time with this new Appeals Modernization Act, they call it, the AMA, the Appeals Modernization Act. It's still in its infancy. There's still a lot of growing pains with the VA, and there's still a lot of growing pains with those advocates out in the field trying to jig and jag with the VA to make sure they're interpreting it right and making sure that I'm interpreting it right. So, well, we all have growing pains with it, but my clients, the ones that I represent, we're getting through it pretty well. I think overall it's going to be a good thing. It's going to replace the old legacy appeals process, which took many years to get a decision if it went through the Board of Veterans Appeals. So timeliness is a good thing, but implementing this new appeals program has definitely shown to be some growing pains with the VA that I found.
Well, with it, I think it's going to take probably, he might say this, but it takes several years before we really get the, is this going to be successful or isn't it? And two, it's an educational process for the VA also. It's not only just the veterans side of things. The VA, they're going through a learning process, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it's the VA, the Appeals Management Office, also known as the AMO, that you would think they would have it down tight. But what I'm finding, and I get it, but what I'm finding is the people that are supposed to know at the VA, the rating specialists, the decision review officers, the coaches, even upper management, they don't have it down as far as exactly how this Appeals Modernization Act is supposed to go. They think they do, but lo and behold, I'll get letters from different VA regional office concerning appeals that I filed that I know darn well are incorrect. And so I have to contact the assistant director or the director or the Veteran Service Center manager and politely explain to them, this letter came out, you're saying I can't file this type of appeal because of blah, 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 where in reality I can, and I'm always right in that case because I'm never going to contact upper management unless I'm 100% know I'm right. So I politely accept the fact that they're going to correct it, but it gets frustrating because you would think the higher level regional offices would have a good grasp of this Appeals Modernization Act and not have to rely on myself or other vet service officers to correct them. So I see that going on a lot, but the good thing, guys, is that the VA is very, very teachable. I mean, they recognize errors and they correct them really quick. So it's a working relationship, but Gerald, I think you hit the nail on the head. I suspect that it's going to be at least 3 to 4 years before this is implemented to where everybody is hitting on all cylinders. Right now, we're grinding gears. If you look at it as a stick shift, you try to get from first to second, second to third, and just grinding that gear and popping that clutch right now. So we'll get it down, there are some growing pains. What I've been finding with this Appeals Modernization Act.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work on both sides, and of course, the better educated you are on the subject, in the process, I don't know if they have a regular book or are they dependent on the they seem to utilize that M21 a lot. Are they going to come out with a guide directory for the VA or for this process?
Under the AMA, Gerald, the Appeals Modernization Act, they're taking specific directive from the Appeals Management Office is what I've been seeing anyway. So when something comes up that the VA regional offices can't answer, they take direction from the AMO, the Appeals Management Office. But as far as a specific book or guideline, it's out there, but it's all legalese. I don't think it's very readable friendly. I feel like myself, I have a pretty good handle on it. I know in the beginning stages of what the VA used to call the RAMP program, Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, which has since now changed to the Appeals Modernization Act, I would just check the internet anywhere I could find any reliable information on RAMP and now the Appeals Modernization Act. There's a lot of websites out there that are credible websites that, at least for the up-to-date information they had at the time, was pretty informative. And so I rely myself on everything that I've learned to this date, and I'm also learning from some key individuals with the Appeals Management Office, some of the sharper individuals with the VA whose main job is to interpret RAMP and implement RAMP and the Appeals Modernization Act. I picked their brain quite a bit, so I feel very comfortable myself, but unfortunately I think there's some VA officials that are in key positions with this new appeals program that are somewhat winging it, shooting from the hip. And so I have to call them on that. And all it does is just waste my time and their time and most importantly, the veterans' time.
Well,
Gerald, I've been a proponent of RAMP and the Appeals Modernization Act. I always have been. In the beginning when everyone was nervous about it, and you had a lot of the high-priced law firms that I read their websites, they were staying away from it, but I've always been a big proponent of it because I knew what the legacy appeals process was like, and that was junk. And I thought to myself, anything is better than the old legacy appeals process. So I jumped into this new appeals process with both feet, and I don't regret that at all. I'm still a proponent of it. I think you can measure success by what you had before, and we had junk before. And right now, we've got a lot better appeals program, and it should get better as people get more familiar with it. I don't think it's going to make everyone happy, but what they had before was just terrible.
Have you been involved with it long enough to recognize if there's any improvement or, are you winning more claims with it? Percentage-wise?
I would say I'm winning more. than the old legacy appeals process. I think when the appeals management process gets fully implemented and everyone's comfortable with it, we're going to have more success. I think that certainly timeliness is a lot better. We're putting money in veterans' pockets a lot quicker. I'm still not satisfied and happy with some of the decisions that are coming out under the Appeals Management Act. And I predict what I have always predicted before, is that unless these rating specialists and DROs start making correct decisions, I'm not saying they have to all be approved, because quite frankly, you know, you win some, you lose some. But if you're going to deny something, do it correctly. Because I've been filing appeals left and right to the Board of Veterans Appeals. So when we exhaust all our appeals with the Appeals Modernization Act, I have no other option but to go to the Board of Veterans Appeals. I must have sent probably 50 appeals so far to the Board of Veterans Appeals as a result of the Appeals Modernization Act. And I'm sure I'm not alone. I talked to some of my peers, attorneys and agents throughout the country, and they're filing just as many. And that's really a reflection on the quality of work on the rating specialists. The decision review officers, who are a level above the rating specialist, they're doing a lot better. But the initial decision under the Appeals Modernization Act, which is done by a rating specialist, not good, inadequate.
Oh, so it's still going to take a lot of work.
It's a work
educational
progress.
Work, I think, schooling, probably.
Yeah. Yes.
They're schooled in the old ways, and now we got a new criteria, and they're not getting transferred over or reschooled, or however they want to word it. But yeah, I can see that.
Well, and Gerald, they have a checks and balances with the VA, so I don't even so much blame the rating specialist who maybe has 3 years of experience. They're supposed to be supervised by coaches, assistant coaches. The coaches are supposed to be supervised by the Veterans Service Center manager, and just like in the military, it goes right up the line to the assistant director and the director. So I think if there was more supervision at the lower level, if these assistant coaches would review these rating decisions closer that these rating specialists are issuing out, I think we'd catch a lot of errors. When I say errors, Gerald, I'm talking blatant errors. I'm talking about, for example, a rating specialist will deny a claim because there's no evidence of service medical records. Well, I'll go through the service medical records. It'll take me 5 minutes to find 3 pages of the veteran complaining of the left knee or the veteran complaining of some other disability. I mean, that's a blatant error. So then I have to file an appeal and say, well, you said the knee was denied based on the lack of service medical records. It took me all of 5 minutes to identify these service medical records. I don't get catty like that, but that's what I feel like saying, but I don't tell them that. But I appeal it based on the fact that here are the service medical records that you said weren't there. Therefore, call the veteran in for a compensation exam and have an examiner determine if it's at least as likely as not that the complaints of left knee on active duty are part and parcel to the left knee problems today. And they do it. If they don't, then I go to the Board of Veterans Appeals or a higher level review. And those are the types of mistakes that I'm seeing, the real obvious ones. I see a lot of mistakes on effective dates, for example. I'm seeing a lot of decisions coming out with an appeal that's effectively prosecuted under appeal that could go back 2 years. Yet they'll grant the appeal. Maybe they'll rate PTSD. They'll bump it up from 30% to 50%, but they'll make it effective the date of the compensation exam, which was 2 months ago. So basically, the veteran was waiting a good year for the compensation exam, And the effective date was only the date of the compensation exam. So he's being penalized basically for the fact that the VA sat on it for so long, where in reality the effective date should have gone back to the original date of claim prosecuted under appeal. Now the VA will come back and say, well, we can only go back as far as it's factually ascertainable that he or she met that higher level. Well, then I counter with the fact, well, you're looking at reasonable doubt as likely as not, CFR 3.102. There's a lot of different things you can do to get that effective date correct. So that's another thing, Gerald, I'm seeing is effective dates are getting missed by these raters, which is causing a lot of problems with these veterans because they're expecting a decision that they started X number of months ago or X number of years ago, the effective date to go all the way back. And so we have to appeal it if it doesn't. Yeah.
Huh. That is, I can see that happening because I think it happened to me. But that effective date, they, for whatever reason, they try to minimize that and get it, wipe as much out of it off from it as they can. And I don't believe that should be their actual job, really. Try to beat a veteran out of their, original effective date. But it should be, is this a legitimate claim? Does a veteran have, is there a nexus here? Or we got medical evidence and all this and that. The effective date should be when you filed your claim.
What the VA has to do, Gerald, is if they grant an increase, they can only go back to the date that it's factually ascertainable that that veteran met that higher level. So there's a lot of belief out there that it automatically goes back to the original effective date prosecuted under appeal. So that's the frustrating part, is that legally they can only go back to the date that they see evidence, medical evidence, that the disability was increased to that level. Now, of course, again, I look at the evidence of record. If I can find any evidence of record that shows that they met that higher level, then I use that. They can't go back just because the veteran says it. We have to look for medical evidence. But if I can't find anything, that old adage that reasonable doubt is likely as not that person met that higher level back that far. And the veteran didn't just wake up one day and all of a sudden exhibit symptomology of PTSD at 70% rather than the 30%. That doesn't just apply to PTSD. I'm just using that as an example. I mean, that could apply to anything. But it'd be nice, Gerald, if the VA just rubber stamped it, went all the way back to the date that's been appealed. But where I'm seeing the VA is looking at, they're not looking at the file close enough, and they're establishing an earlier date. A lot of times that earlier date is only the date of the last compensation exam, which I just had one case the other day. He kept the appeal open for 2 to 3 years. They sat on it and sat on it and sat on it. I kept bugging them and bugging them. Finally, we had to get a congressional involved. Finally, the person got his compensation exam 2 months ago. Well, they said, okay, you're 100% now, but we're only going to make it effective the date that you had your compensation exam. We're not going to go all the way back to 2 years, even though you've been waiting for this. So.
Oh, that's not right, is it?
Well, their argument is that the compensation exam is the first time they saw that it was medically factually ascertainable that person met the higher level. They didn't bother to look at the veteran statement, the testimonials, anything that could establish an earlier effective date. I'm going to get that vet the earlier effective date. I know it, but it's just the principle of it that we have to go round and round. It's these type of claims that really bog down the system, and it's just going to make it worse, I think.
Do you see a backlog piling up anywhere? I mean, not under this new system.
I do. I do. And I'll try to explain it, how the backlog has already fallen. So what happens, Gerald, is you have when you get a VA decision after February 19th of 2019, when the AMA officially came into play, when you get a decision after that, you're given the opportunity to file an appeal under three lanes. One is a supplemental lane, one is a higher level lane, and one is just direct to the Board of Veterans Appeals. So if you go the supplemental lane, that means you have new and relevant evidence that you want to submit with the appeal that you want the VA to look at. That's what's getting backlogged. That supplemental lane, they're about 8-9 months out. So that's where the backlog is happening. Now, to expound on that a little bit more, I brought up the higher level review, the higher level lane. That's basically saying I want to appeal it, but I don't have any new and relevant evidence, but I want a decision review officer to look at it. Someone who's never looked at it before, I want a DRO, or they call them DROs, to look at it and make a different decision. Now, they're turning those in around about 60 days, 60 to 90 days, unless there's a new exam that needs to be had, which sometimes happens. A DRO will say, yeah, you failed to call this veteran in for an exam, or he did have an exam and it wasn't adequate. So those can extend out a little bit. But the higher level reviews, those are kicking out fairly quick. And because they're being done by DROs, they're better decisions. But under the supplemental lane review, that's where the backlog's happening. And I think that was something unexpected by the VA.
Well, the backlog's going to tell us a lot. I believe
right.
that's going to show where we've hit the corner post, I believe. So we'll have to keep an eye out where the backlog starts piling up. Then we know we got a real issue with that. And would there be any way to avoid the pile up and get around it? Do they have a detour or anything you can get around me, but one of those backlogs?
Well, you could always ask for an expedite of a claim, whether it's in appeal status or not. That's one way to get around it. And the VA is pretty strict on the expedite clause. The law specifically says that if your claim's at a VA regional office, not a BVA, the VA regional office, you have to be 85 years or older to get an expedite, or have a terminal illness or very, very serious health consequences that could potentially end your life prematurely, or have a financial hardship. And the VA defines a financial hardship as being homeless or potentially being homeless. So if you have an eviction notice or home foreclosure notice or anything like that, the VA will expedite your claim. They're pretty good about doing that. Now, if your claim's at the Board of Veterans Appeals, all of that applies, but you only have to be 75 years of age or older. So there's a little bit of a break there with the Board of Veterans Appeals. So Gerald, that's one way to get your claim expedited, if you will, not only at the initial stage, the non-appeal stage, but also the appeal stage. And the VA is pretty good about that, I will say. When they get evidence of an expedite, they will do that. Now, they're very strict about it, too. You know, in the day, if you knew someone, maybe you could get someone's claim through faster than normal if they didn't get the criteria for expedite. But now they've been pretty much told that unless you meet one of those criteria, you're waiting just like everyone else.
Uh-huh. Well, my claim's been expedited for about 5 years now.
Oh, wow.
A couple different times.
There's no expedite there.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Well, and you know, Gerald, and if anyone is out there listening, they want to call in and talk about their particular issue. We've had callers come in before and worked out pretty well, so.
Yeah, let me give out our number here, John. If we have any listeners out there that'd like to call in with a question or comment, Please call in. Our number is 347-237-4819. Now, that number once again is 347-237-4819, and then hit number one whenever, and that'll bring you into the queue here with us. And we see you, we'll try to get you on there where you can ask John some questions or give some comments. We'd be glad to hear from you.
And Gerald, I've had veterans all over the world say that they listen in on this podcast or, you know, Hadit.com podcast. And they call me up and say, hey, I heard you on the Hadit.com. And I had to just talk to a guy in Iraq who's at the consulate there who listened faithfully and ended up being a client of mine. So, I mean, we're out there. You guys are out there. So keep spreading the word.
Yeah. Yes, we are. And my lands, I don't know how many different countries listen to us. John may know, but
anyone with the internet,
we have
more
listeners than you realize.
Yep.
I mean, kind of hard to tell here right now, but and a lot of them here is through the archives, I believe. Anyway, we try to get the word out the best we can and helpful information that helps the veterans.
You know, Gerald, talking about that Appeals Modernization Act, I touched on the three avenues that you can opt into when you appeal under the AMA, Supplemental Lane Review, the Higher Level Review, and you can go right to the Board of Veterans Appeals if you want. You could say, I've had it with these local VA regional offices. They aren't listening to me. I'm just going to send it to an administrative law judge at the Board of Veterans Appeals. You can do that. And overall, the law judges are sharp. I mean, they're fairly liberal. I mean, if they see a claim that could be granted, they'll grant it. Or if they see a claim that needs to be remanded back to the regional office for more work, they'll do that. The only drawback with the Board of Veterans Appeals is, on average, with this new Appeals Act, you're waiting about a year. But I tell you, a year is a lot better than the old legacy appeals process with the Board of Veterans Appeals. You're waiting about 4 or 5 years.
Yes. Yeah, a year would be a walk in the park for a lot of, compared to the old system.
In my opinion, I
think they ought to have a time frame on it, a year maximum. There's no reason any claim should go over a year before it's been settled.
Yep. You know, it'd be nice, Gerald, if they held their feet to the fire and said, you've got a year to make a decision. Anything over a year is automatically granted to the veteran.
I've said that for years because I've seen, there's a lot of veterans waited a lot, so many years, and even passed away during, they died during the process, and that shouldn't be.
And that's where it's important that if and we can never predict when we're going to die.
No.
But you can get a pretty good gauge from your doctor. If you're seriously ill, you can usually get a pretty good gauge from your doctor, especially if it's cancer or something to that effect. And all you need to do is get the report or get a doctor's letter into the hands of the VA. They will expedite those claims. They're supposed to. And if they don't, you need to rattle their cage with your attorney or your agent or your VSO. But as life is, unexpectedly we die. And I've seen it where a veteran's claim or a veteran dies and the claim dies with them because there's no spouse, which leads into a law that should be reiterated that with the VA, the law says that if a veteran dies, the spouse can carry on the claim just as if the veteran was living. and can develop the claim, present new and relevant evidence, can pick up the ball right from where the veteran left off. But unfortunately, in those cases where the veteran is not married, if they die, the claim dies with them.
Well, that's true, and the one, even a lot of them that are married, their spouses, when the veteran passes on, they just so sick and tired of it all. They don't want nothing more to do with it. And they totally lose what benefits they could have got. And that's sad when you see that. And we've seen a lot of it over the years here.
Well, we hope that the veterans will make it very clear to their spouse that this is what they've got going on with the VA. In fact, my clients, I've got a handful of clients that are seriously ill, that quite likely may not be around in the next 2 or 3 years. And I make it very clear to them, you make sure that your wife or your husband knows how to get a hold of me when that time comes. And I promise you that I will carry on your claim after you pass away for your wife.
Uh-huh.
And I talk to the wife and say, this is what, you need to do. When you feel comfortable, when you think it's time to give me a call, let me know. Well, first of all, let me know right away that your husband has passed away so I can notify the VA. But when you get to the point where you feel comfortable calling me and going over your options, please do that. But you're right, Gerald. I think that many spouses, they see what their husband or wife had went through with the VA. Not only are they going to deal with the loss of their loved one, but now they got to take on that bureaucratic process with the VA. And it would be too overwhelming, and they just don't want to do it. But I guess for myself, Gerald, I like to think that I'm going to bear the brunt of the legalese and the problems with the VA to take that over for that widow or widower. So
yeah,
you're right. Some of them don't follow up, and it's sad.
We did several shows a while back on the end-of-life folders, where you put all your pertinent information in one location. And, of course, one of them would be the form allow the wife to proceed on, or the spouse to proceed on with your claim, which we have some more planned in the future on that same topic. But everyone should have an end-of-life folder with their insurance policies, and DD-214s, award letters, or anything that might be helpful, because many times the spouse is not totally up to date on everything you've been doing.
And make sure that an end-of-life folder includes my card or
yes,
the card that the veteran is working with, whether it's an agent such as myself and Fields agent, or an attorney, or a national service officer like the DAV or VFW or American Legion, or even your state or county service officer. Make sure that your end-of-life folder includes a point of contact for your wife or husband. So, it's going to be hard enough for them dealing with the loss, but having the direction to go to the VA is going to be a lot easier for them.
Yes, it will. And it's a small amount of time spent that could reap a lot of benefits for your spouse and loved ones. And so everyone needs to, if you don't have one, go ahead and generate one. Just start it up. You'd be surprised how quick it'll gather data.
Well, Gerald, you'd be surprised how many widows, mostly widows, but sometimes widowers will call me and say, my husband or wife was a veteran and they weren't drawing any compensation at all, but I'm just calling you to see if there's anything that I could possibly be eligible for. And there's nothing wrong in doing that. there are programs with the VA called pension. It's based on financial need, so that there is that program. If you meet those parameters, you could collect a widow or widower's pension. The other thing is even if the veteran wasn't in receipt of any disability compensation, if their cause of death, or at least a contributory cause of death, was related to something that happened on active duty, that person could be eligible for what's called dependency and indemnity compensation, which would pay that widow or widower $1,400-$1,500 a month, free health insurance, and multitude of state benefits depending upon what state you live in. I had a case not that long ago where the widow called me out of the blue and didn't think she was eligible for anything. And so we got to talking, and I asked her, I said, well, how'd your husband die? What would the death certificate say? Well, something to do with the lungs, she said. Why don't you get that fax? You'll fax that death certificate to me. Found out he had congestive lung failure was the primary cause, and found out he served in the Navy, and he served aboard ship. And as Jay Basser knows, a lot of asbestos on those ships. And so what we were able to find is that this particular veteran who died did have a post-active duty asbestos particulates in his lungs. And we were able to show that it was at least as likely as not that he could contracted asbestos as a result of his military service, and we got her benefits. So that doesn't happen often, but those are the types of stories where at least it would encourage someone to make a call to someone like a vet service officer and just inquire. I don't know if I'm eligible for anything, but I thought I'd call and find out.
That's right, and it's certainly worth looking into, and rather than throwing your hands up and saying, well, this is the way it's going to be. sometimes there is something there, and you just didn't know it. Takes someone that deals with these claims all the time to recognize a lot of different issues that most people overlook.
It's a complicated bureaucratic process that the VA has. I wind through it because I've been doing it almost 30 years, and I better know what I'm doing it that long. So it comes fairly easy to me. And what cases don't come easy to me, I can research and investigate and get the answers that I need. I mean, not every case is simple. There's a lot of studying of the M21 and the CFR and the different regulations and manuals just to make sure that what you're doing is correct. The last thing you want to put in is a frivolous claim and get your client all excited and then come to find out you misinterpreted the law and there's no evidence and there's no benefit to be had. The last thing you want to do is tuck tail and tell a veteran to say, yeah, I misinterpreted the law, and actually you're not going to get anything. I don't think I've ever had to do that, but it does bother me that there are some service officers that just kind of wing it, throw claims in, and hope for the best. I know that's happening because I've actually taken over claims from agents and attorneys and VSOs, and I look through it, and I'm thinking, my God, what were they doing? What were they thinking when they filed a claim this way? And so, I'm not picking at anyone, but it's truth. I mean, it's fact. It's absolutely truthful. Some of these development of these claims that I've taken over, you just rub your head and think, how can you represent clients this way?
Well, that's a sad story there. Because we have too much of that across the country, and that has went a long way to contribute to the misery of the veterans today in the claims process.
Right.
There again, we go back to schooling. They missed something in the schooling. They're just not properly trained or something, or the ones that's like you say, they all have their coaches and what have you. I don't know what they're doing. Someone's missing the boat out there. And
well, and Gerald, I can sense the frustration. You know, in the VA's benefit, they are turning out some awesome claims too. And you know, I don't want to say every claim is disastrous, but on a 1 to 10 scale, I suppose, you know, probably 30% of the claims are getting kicked out that probably were denied that should have been approved. But we're getting some real good claims decisions from not only rating specialists but decision review officers, and so I don't want to sound like everything is coming out of the VA as poop, but it's enough where you definitely have to keep them on their toes. But yeah, you're right, Gerald. Some of these claims decisions coming out, they're supposed to be the rating specialists. They're supposed to be supervised, you'd like to think there's going to be a second set of eyes on some of these things, but you wonder if that's happening because how can two sets of eyes of VA officials miss some of these decisions when they're so blatantly denied erroneously?
Yeah, a second set of eyes would help. I don't know what their process is, but you know, I do know they have coaches and supervisors. You know, if they have a question or something, they could ask them. Or do they go over their work? You know, just come through like an inspector to a plant. They just check a part here and part there.
I think they audit.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is that these initial rating specialists, they're allowed to make decisions without any oversight. They assume that they've had the education and experience and training to make decisions without immediate oversight. But I think what's happening, what I've been told anyway, is that they will audit these decisions. Maybe a coach will look at one out of every 10 decisions that a rating specialist makes, only because of the fact that they're spread so thin that they can't look at every decision. So it'd be nice if they had the manpower to review every decision that comes out from some of these rating specialists, but that just doesn't seem the case because, after all, that's what appeals are made for. You'd like to think that they would review these decisions twice before they go out to avoid an appeal. But at the end of the day, you get a lot of swings at the plate, Gerald. You get a decision, you can appeal it. You've got different lanes. You get denied, you can appeal it further. You can present new and material evidence. You can cite cues, which are clear and unmistakable errors. So there's a lot of ways to skin the cat with the VA. The problem is the timeliness. If you don't fall into one of those categories of expedite, you know, you're waiting a long time for benefits that you probably should have gotten 4 years ago.
You're right. I don't know, maybe, hopefully that'll change here in the next few years. Let's hope. I got my fingers crossed anyway that this whole thing will fall into place and function a lot more smoothly. But if we start seeing a huge backlogs piling up, we know we have a situation in that area. And
I Gerald, I think that, and I've said this before in previous shows, I started doing this in October of 1992. And, for me, in my opinion, this Appeals Modernization Act and the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program that preceded it, the RAMP program, is by far the biggest evolution, the biggest change that I've seen in the Department of Veterans Affairs. I mean, they've been trying to implement different programs, try to skin the cat different ways to try to speed up claims and the appeals process and the whole thing. But to me, this is by far the biggest program of change that I've seen. And for the most part, despite the growing pains I talked about before, I think it's, I know, it's running a lot better than the old legacy appeals process. And I think, you know, give it time, it's going to get better. It just takes time. But the backlog is coming with the supplemental lien reviews under the appeals process that I've noticed. So if you're appealing something and you have new and relevant evidence you want to submit with it, unless you have a financial hardship or some sort of expedite like that, you're probably waiting 8-9 months on average.
Well, let's hope that don't start growing from 8-9 months to a year, year and a half.
Well, I think it is growing. I think that, you know, if you'd have talked to me about this 3 months ago, I would say the supplemental lien reviews, you know, they're kicking those out in 60 days, but that's, it's growing and growing. And it's really a product of the original decision. That's really what it is.
Well, at least allow them to nail down the location of the problem, where they have the problems and where they need to concentrate on making necessary adjustments.
And you get a lot of swings at the plate under this appeals program too. It's like a revolving circle. You're always protecting that original date prosecuted under appeal, even if it goes to the Board of Veterans Appeals. And if the Board of Veterans Appeals denied it, under the old legacy appeals process, your only option was the Court of Veterans Appeals to keep that original date open, effectively prosecuted under appeal. Under this Appeals Modernization Act, you can get denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals. You still have a year to present new and relevant evidence. If that new and relevant evidence is persuasive enough to grant the claim, you could still be compensated all the way back to the original date of claim prosecuted under appeal. Whereas under the old legacy appeals process with the Board of Veterans Appeals, if it was denied, your only option was the Court of Veterans Appeals. And, Gerald, you have some experience with that. That takes a heck of a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think I've been there twice, you know, where you can come in with new material and relevant evidence, you can come in with a new IMO, can't you, from a different doctor? That would satisfy that.
Absolutely.
Unless you found new, old medical records or something that they hadn't mentioned prior.
Right.
So there is a chance.
That's a good point, Gerald. Yep, a good independent medical opinion from a qualified physician would constitute what the VA now calls new and relevant evidence. They used to call it new and material evidence, and I have to catch myself every once in a while. But now they call it new and relevant evidence. I don't think they had to change it. I think we all get the meaning of what it means. But a good solid independent medical opinion from a physician that puts it together well and identifies the facts and identifies the fact that they've reviewed the service medical records and or the VA claims file, and it's always best that the doctor examines the veteran. I've always said that. I think there are a lot of physicians out there that practice in this type of thing, and they don't it's not their policy to actually review the veteran, examine the veteran. It's just all they do is review the medical records, and I haven't come across a DRO or a DRO with the VA regional office yet that doesn't put a lot of emphasis, probative value, on a doctor that actually puts the hands on the veteran. Now there is telemedicine, which is a compromise, I think, but I always tell veterans, if you're going to get me an independent medical opinion, go see the doctor. Have that doctor certify. I physically examined Joel Veteran or Jill Veteran today.
Yes.
And these are my findings.
That's exactly right. I think that's the way to go. But like you say, they're putting more emphasis on this medical stuff, too. I don't know how well the VA accepts that type of material. I don't know anyone that has actually used it. I guess they have, that they could be examined over, say, if you had Skype or, you know, some kind of video hookup.
Well, they're using it a lot for the VA Medical Center. Especially for medical care, and it's fine because that doctor recognizes that veteran on the TV screen, so that doctor knows this is John Dorley or you know, whoever it is. Where it gets a little shaky for claims work, and I can only speak from my experience. I wouldn't speak for any Droz or coaches or rating specialists, but they, you know, if it's a telemedicine independent medical opinion, who's to say that's the correct veteran on that screen? I mean, that doctor may have never seen that veteran before. I mean, who's to say it is or isn't? I mean, I'm not saying veterans are dishonest. I'm just saying that these decision makers with the VA, they have very specific rules and guidelines that they have to go by. I think telemedicine is great for healthcare in some cases, but when it comes to independent medical opinions and doctors that are doing an examination for a veteran, I don't like telemedicine. I don't, at least that route anyway. I like the veteran to go see the doctor, and maybe that requires some travel.
That would be my recommendation. They actually go get have hands put on. But they are pushing telemedicine. Even the VA is. I don't know, for a situation such as a claim, I believe I would utilize a doctor and get a real IMO.
Yep, I agree.
We just don't know enough about it that it could work. I guess it could in some cases.
But just talking a little bit more about the Appeals Modernization Act that I was kind of droning on about earlier. It's just remember, folks, when you get a decision from the VA, that's not the end of it. You probably don't want to tackle it by yourself. I always use the analogy: if someone asked me to replace a carburetor in an engine, I wouldn't know what the heck to do. I'd probably dismantle the alternator and, you know, I'd screw it off. So my point being is that if you get a decision from the VA, don't try to tackle it on your own. Find an attorney, find an agent, find a service officer, a credible service officer, and interview them. I mean, there are plenty of representatives out there, but there are representatives out there that, you know, you should interview, because most of my clients, most of my veterans, they're going to get a good feel whether that particular service officer knows their stuff. And if you have a bad feeling, go to a different service officer. So interview the service officers that can help you handle your appeal, and trust that person, and go with what they say, and work with that person. So that's the key. So when you get a decision from the VA, if it's adverse, just know that that's not the end of the deal. You can file an appeal under the Appeals Modernization Act. It's important that your advocate selects the appropriate lane, whether it's the Board of Veterans Appeals lane or the higher level lane or the supplemental lane. but it's got to be one of those lanes.
Yeah. You need some expert help, because the regular veteran, most of it, a lay veteran, just not schooled well enough, or have dealt with them, with all the regulations and what have you, that they can adequately fight their claim, unless it's, you know, it's an open and shut, you know, deal. It's just a simple thing. They're just not educated in the process.
I think education is the key, Gerald. And I've met some very, very sharp, dedicated, patriotic VA officials. All they want to do is do right by the veteran. And I believe that. They have a big heart. But I think the key is education. I've always said that. And the second key is manpower. Getting more rating specialists, getting more judges, getting more drills, getting more people within the Veterans Administration that develops these claims, so that the people that are doing it now aren't spread so thin and get so stressed out. The problem with that, obviously, is that their budget only allows them to do so much, and if you increase the budget, you increase the taxes, and no one wants to pay more taxes, but they want their claims done quicker. So, you know, it's a conundrum. So I don't know what the answer is, except I've always said more VA officials, more manpower, and better education and better oversight, I think, is the key too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so much easier just to get someone who knows what they're doing. Keep you out of trouble.
Right. Right, right. And,
and
you know,
you
what's nice, Gerald?
You want to screen them real good, too.
And Gerald, what I said before is I developed a relationship with a lot of these VA regional offices, especially some of the key regional offices that handle appeals, the one out of St. Petersburg and the one out of Seattle, Washington. And I developed a good relationship with the managers that handle these appeals. They don't actually adjudicate the appeals, but they oversee the people that do. And they're very approachable. If you treat them professionally and with respect, they're going to do the same to you. And you don't burn your bridge, and you don't overuse them. You don't run to them with every little thing. But if you have a case that really warrants attention, that would save everyone a lot of time with an appeal, I've been able to go to these people and say, hey, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, if you look at Gerald Cook's claim, last four of the claim number, blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm thinking. You know, tell me I'm wrong, because if I don't want to have to appeal this and tie everything up, but 9 times out of 10, they come back and say, yeah, let's get this fixed. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. And it, so that's a success story.
That is, yeah. And, you know, that makes it so much easier. Well, it cuts down on the load on the VA. It helps them get the veteran taken care of properly. And all this is meaningful. So, you know, in that respect, where you have a good rapport and you're up against a rock and hard spot, like, say, you can pick up the phone and say, hey, what, explain this to me. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. There's something not right.
And the beautiful thing about the VA, it's much like when we're in the military, there's always a chain of command.
Yes, sir.
And if you're not getting an email returned, if you're not getting a phone call returned, the rating specialist answers to the assistant coach. The assistant coach answers to the coach. The DRO answers to someone that drove. The Veterans Service Center manager answers to the assistant director. The assistant director answers to the director, and the director answers to the secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and so on. So, I mean, there is a chain of command that I've been known to use, and doesn't always work. You know, you better have your ducks in a row, but I mean, it's nice. You have that chain of command, and you develop relationships with people at the VA, and it does work out. So it does help to kind of stroke the cat a little bit with the VA.
Well, where they know that, you know, they get to know you and know you're sincere, and you're not one to call rattle or cage every time you have to snip with your nose. When you do call them, it's something that's serious and warrants taking a look at, then they're going to pay a lot more attention to you.
You know, everyone wants to do the right thing, I think, for the most part, on our end and the VA's end. But you're going to find those bad apples in the VA that ruins the apple cart. But I honestly believe that everyone wants to do the right thing. I think most VA officials, just to even decrease their workload, they would like to write off an appeal and get it paid, get it done, get it out of their hair. But they also have to answer to their supervisor that may question why a particular claim was granted when it shouldn't have been. So they're very careful about that, and I understand that. But for the most part, if I contact them, I'm presenting a legitimate appeal gripe, so to speak. But before we get out of here, Gerald, can I share my email address and phone number? Would that be okay?
Oh, you bet. You bet. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, if anyone wants to call and just kind of explain what's going on with their claim or appeal or whatever what's going on, you can reach me at area code 651. It's a Minneapolis-St. Paul area code, 651-303-3062. That's 651-303-3062. Or you can email me. My email is benefitsagent@comcast.net. That's benefits, B-E-N-E-F-I-T-S, agent, A-G-E-N-T, @comcast.net.
Well, it's been a good show, John. And I appreciate your insight because, you know, this is, now we know there's a backlog there starting to pile up. And something to keep an eye on. There may be a detour around it we can take, or, you know, whatever we can come up with that'll help reduce that. And the VA, I'm certain, would be looking at that to see what, how can they get that moving more smoothly and everything. So, all in all, it's not the veterans against the VA. It's veterans working with the VA to help better the whole system. And the more apt we're to do that, the better off we all are.
You're right. You can help yourself by putting together a smooth running tight claim. Give the VA something to work with. But on the other hand, I'm not a proponent of the VA either. I mean, you can put the best claim forward and they just take a you-know-what on it. And you know, so that gets frustrating too. So but all in all, put a good solid claim together, cover your bases, get some good medical records, get an advocate who knows what they're doing so they can coach you on compensation exams so they can help you put the claim together. File the appropriate appeals, file the appropriate papers, and have it written up properly. You save yourself a lot of time and a lot of anguish and effort.
Yeah, you're right, John. So it's everybody's got to do their part in order to be successful. And even then, that's a rough road. But like I say, I appreciate you coming on and hope to get you back on here real soon.
Yep, you're welcome, guys. Thanks for having me on. And feel free to call on me anytime.
Okay, and thank you very much.
All right, take care. Bye.
Okay.
Pretty good show there, Mr. Cook.
Well, thank you, John. John did a good job.
Of course he did.
He always does.
Okay. Well, tune in next week. We might have a surprise guest next week.
Well, we may have.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Hey, you never know, you know. I mean, if you can survive your hip, my shoulder, and John Dorley's playing Frogger with a bicycle with a truck, you know, and still do a show, you know, that's pretty good. So.
Yeah, the pain gang.
Yes, with a walking wounded.
Yeah, I think so.
Of course, now, you know, we're all drawing a check from the VA. They want to call us the walking dead.
Yeah, well,
that show's already taken. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
so,
that's
yeah.
good. I think I'll go ahead and shut her down, and you and I will touch base shortly.
Okay.
We have a critique.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to the Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Hadit.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show and are not the opinions of Hadit.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basher Show.